Hello, and welcome to Future Imperfect. I'm your host, Stephen C. Phillips. And in this episode of the show, I plan on talking about, well, some of the latest stuff to drop on Star Trek Discovery, including the latest episode featuring Harry Mudd. So without further ado, getting into some of the Star Trek Discovery news, it will obviously return for a second season, which kind of is not surprising. I think they were just waiting for the official count to come in from the All Access service, which they said that it's been a huge success so far with the subscriber growth, and it's led to the second season of the show. So obviously no second season details are given because season one's still going and they don't want to kind of spoil it. I will say that it's starting to surprise me in actually doing something halfway decent. Those first few episodes, I was just like, WTF, like, seriously, it was so backwater woods Star Trek that I couldn't get beyond it. The instant travel and some of the content therein and some of the high-techness of it, I still can't get past, and same with the Klingons. I know I've harped on that a million times over. But this episode actually was pretty good, and we got to see Harry Mudd in action. So it's our second episode with Harry Mudd. Him kind of talking about his dear, sweet Stella. And it's interesting because it starts out with a party at the beginning of the episode, and Burnham's awkwardness therein. And the first time, because this episode is about a time paradox, time loop situation where only two people remember the events of that day. One of which being Harry Mudd, who stows away aboard an alien creature that's on the endangered list of the Federation. And so they're supposed to take it to whatever outpost that they needed to take to. And within is a soldier that comes out of the mouth and shoots and obliterates a bunch of Federation Starfleet members, and Burnham manages to call the bridge. And Harry Mudd is blowing his way through the system until he gets locked in a shaft, and he keeps repeating the same 30 minutes over and over and over and getting closer and closer to his objective of the spore drive, because he wants to learn how it all works. And eventually you get to see, it adds a little bit of laughter and funny moments to the episode, because you get for one, Harry Mudd hates Lorca so much that he's killed him 50 plus times, as explained in the episode, which was quite humorous. And then you get to see a montage of a variety of ways that Harry Mudd has taken out Lorca, which was kind of fun to watch. And although a bit brutal on some of it. And then he had these like he got to go to Lorca's hidden chamber at one point and finds these little purple globes, as well as a certain gun that he, which looks kind of like a disruptor, like a human disruptor in some degree, and he shoots Lorca with it and obliterates him, and this little purple dot thing, he takes out some of the crew. I believe it was Ash Tyler. Yeah, Ash Tyler. He took out Ash with the little purple dot, and it incinerated him. And so after they've noticed that Harry's going to win, Burnham goes to Harry Mudd in the captain's ready room to inform him that she's too valuable of a prize, and explains who she is. And Harry is about to take her in, and she grabs the other purple dot, swallows it, and incinerates herself, so that when they come back, Ash Tyler will be back with her, so she didn't have to live without him. And Lieutenant Stamets is kind of interesting in this episode because not only is he a little bit more kind of space loopy out there, he remembers all of it because he's had the tardigrade infusion into his blood, as well as the bio adapters onto his wrists so that he can basically plug into the tardigrade spore chamber without it impaling his torso. So they made adaptations to it. And he's the only one that remembers on the crew, so he has to continuously come earlier and earlier to Burnham to get Ash Tyler, and so the three of them can apprehend Mud, and they come up with this unique plan of dissolving Harry Mudd's con to sell the ship to the Klingons. And so it's a pretty interesting episode, and I'll say that this is probably one of my favorite of this season so far, because we got now, mind you, the party bit I didn't really care for. I know that, you know, they've had it in all the shows to some degree, some kind of a party. It was never like this is like a, you know, 21st century Trek, so you're gonna get that kind of setup. And I don't particularly care for the party scene as an individual anyway, so that doesn't resonate with me. But it shows that they can have some down-to-earth time, and that was kind of nice to see. And seeing the awkwardness of Burnham trying to escape from her Vulcan emotionless mentality of how she's going to deal with liking Ash Tyler, who likes her as well, and... But no, I think that the two standout roles in this were Stamets and Harry Mudd, and it made the episode very fun. It made it very timeline-centric because you get to the point of why... Well, you get a little bit of why of Harry's con-manisms and how he ends up the way he is in the original series with Kirk. The few times that he shows up twice in the original series and then once in the animated series, but nonetheless he's still a formidable foe regardless, and he always seems to get his hands on this really high tech technology, and they mention how he has these chrono crystals that are on his ship, which is inside of the alien creature, and that's how he keeps replaying time over and over and over. And so they eventually have to figure out that in order to beat him, they have to, in order to survive, they have to do exactly what he wants and live within that 30-minute time frame so he doesn't reset the time. And I think that they actually came up with a pretty solid episode here. And it looks like it's going to get a little interesting. You're going to probably see a lot more of the unique alien creature characters kind of come and go as the season progresses in the show, since they're obviously not afraid to lose cast members. Like the second episode, we lost Giorgio, and the third episode, we lost the security officer fourth episode, we lost the security officer of the Discovery, who was then replaced in episode 5 by Ash Tyler. And so I think that they're riding the line pretty well here at this point. Other than, you know, my few gripes about some of the changes they've made, it's turning out to be pretty solid at this point. Kind of like how, you know, TNG, Voyager, DS9, the original series, a lot of them, they had to kind of catch their footing first. And I think finally Discovery has caught its footing. And I think that we've kind of finally hit this stride that it's going to project through the rest of the season. The only downside is that we're getting close to Thanksgiving, and this half-season arc that they're doing right now is going to be done, and they'll pick it up with the second half of the season, but the different story arc kind of continuation of season one in January, which is a little saddening that they're going that route, but I kind of get it. But it'll be interesting to see who lives and who dies, how the Klingon situation changes, and how they get to look like their TOS counterparts and maybe how they explained why they look the way they do at the beginning of this series, from the fact that Enterprise looks like the TNG versions. And then you have the original series, which are the plain-faced, and then in the motion picture, they're back to the forehead ridges and brown. And I just would like some explanation on the Klingons and why they're so warped at this point in history, just before the original series. So, yeah, I really enjoyed Harry Mudd. And the funny part is I have some limited knowledge of Harry Mudd as a character prior to this. But the funny part is he is kind of this everyman yet con man, and it kind of gives you this reason why he hates Starfleet so much, and it makes him that much more of a menace, and kind of gives him more reason to be this notorious con man that hates the Federation as bad as he does. But yeah, he, you get to see his wife, albeit briefly, and how he talks about Stella at all times, and how her family did not approve of him, and that he borrowed a large sum of money, and you know, all this other garbage. But he kind of explains how he escapes the Klingon ship, and you get to find out that Lorca and Tyler, well, the crew figure out that they know him. So, but yeah, I really like the fact that Stamets was kind of a standout role in this, because ultimately when I first saw him, I hated the character with the utmost. I disliked him up until he started using the spore drive, and then he kind of loosened up. So, he's definitely the standout, and I like that this was kind of like the cause and effect, TNG, like, you know, causality, you know, loop of, you know, living the last 30 seconds over and over of, you know, whole breach, smash, boom, restart, you know, so it was a lot of fun to watch. But yeah, the previous encounters, at least with the Enterprise, Mudd uses the illegal Venus drug and attempted to sell it to a group of lithium miners led by Ben Childress on Rigel 12. And it gives the impression that the women are beautiful, which in fact they're not, which the miners married anyway. So, yeah, and Kirk is constantly pressing charges and locking up Harry in jail. It's funny to see his police record, because it says Harcourt, Fenton, Mudd. And this is in the original series anyway. It says smuggling, sentence suspended, transport of stolen goods, purchase of space vessel with counterfeit currency, sentences, psychiatric treatment, effectiveness disputed, future police record code, and then, you know, his information and what he looks like. And says any information pertaining to Mudd, please notify authorities. Just because he's that massive of a pain in the rear. And he's always got like these weird alien technologies, which is kind of intriguing. And it kind of makes you wonder how he gets his hands on it, because he ends up on this android planet too during the second encounter on the original series, and manages to commandeer the Enterprise, albeit briefly. And the androids actually take over. And so it's funny to see the older Stella Mudd androids that are attacking or yelling at Harry Mudd in that Enterprise episode, or the original series episode. And then he comes back with the love potion crystals on the third appearance in the animated series. So, no, I'm definitely interested to see where they go with his character, and as much as I disliked the original thoughts on some of these people portraying older versions of these characters, or younger versions, I should say, I think they've done pretty solid so far. So it's not been entirely that bad. So I don't know. What do you guys think about the whole Harry Mudd episode and the fact that Harry's not necessarily this bad character, but not necessarily this heroic character either? Because again, he's a space pirate, con man, thief, swindler. He's just very inventive and intelligent, and usually underestimated. But I think it's funny. The episode's called "Magic to Make the Sanest Man Go Wild or Go Mad," because he just constantly is going against it. The sarcasm ebbing from his character is probably the most fun part. And the fact that he's managed to single-handedly take over this ship, because he learns each time and takes it over, and eventually gets to the point where he's so bored of killing Lorca at taking over the ship, he just kind of doesn't know what to do anymore by the last two, and then the last one throws him off completely, and he's like, oh, and he lets his guard down. Like, it's hilarious. So I definitely give this episode high props. I don't know, like, how well the next one's going to be, because that one's going to be featured on Saru. And that kind of lead to the premise that he may die, but they don't necessarily say who dies. Or it could be the fact that the Admiral is taken. And that reminds me of another situation entirely, of that... They mention that the Admiral could possibly be another character from the original series. And I'm a little lost on what they think on this particular aspect. It's the Admiral, what's her name? That's right, Admiral Cornwell. They led to believe that, even though it's not a reference to an obscure original series character of the same name. Instead, even though it was shot down, they speculated on social media that in Dagger of the Mind, there was a character that Lethe and Admiral Cornwell could be the same person, which they look very similar, because Lethe was brainwashed, former inmate working as a therapist at a Federation penal colony. The reasons for her being at the penal colony is the first place were a mystery. When Captain Kirk asked what she was in for, she dodged the question. Now, because Discovery takes place about 10 years before the events of Dagger of the Mine, it was postulated that Lethe was once Admiral Cornwell, but has had her memories entirely erased of her previous life, which, it sounds crazy, but it could be plausible. So I guess we'll have to find out what happens on that, whether that's true or not. And the other thing is they wonder if Lorca could be from the Mirror Universe, but not necessarily bad. And that if they use this... unused storyline from the final season of Enterprise, and that was kind of mentioned in Mirror Mirror, where Kirk had this thing called the Tantalus Field, which transports its victims to other dimensions, kind of like a, you know, just maybe they sent Lorca to this universe, and that's why he's got as dark of a past and kind of this battle hungry, ready kind of guy, but yet he's kind of grounded at the same point that his crew still mean more. So I don't know. It could lead to that as well. I'm not entirely sure what they're going to go with at this point. And then there's, of course, the Ash Tyler thing about, you know, is he a Klingon? Isn't he, you know? So it's interesting. So there's also the whole thing with Spock will not be showing up in the series, as far as they've mentioned. So I guess we'll just kind of have to wait and see what happens. It's definitely going in different directions than what I expected, and I think that that's kind of a good thing. The other thing that's kind of cool is that they've mentioned, obviously, that it's going to have the new season and that it's been renewed, but I wonder if it's going to start getting brighter and more tonally just nicer, grounded towards the original series type of thing. And if they're going to kind of go the less war and kind of look closer to the original series and how their costumes and how their uniform ships and production and everything, how it will look and start to resemble. But I guess that production designers for the show hinted that the look of Starfleet will eventually start to resemble what fans are used to from the original series, which means that we could see full-on recreation of the 1960s retro future tech. Weirder things have happened. Maybe that could be why Star Trek Continues is disbanding after episode 11. Kind of makes you wonder, though, doesn't it? Like, I wonder if Discovery, because mind you, all other Star Trek productions were kind of cease and desist, and yet Star Trek Continues managed to continue. Something's a little fishy there, I think. But either way, like, I'm glad the Continues people got to finish out their round of 11 episodes, basically. They still have one more that's going to be coming out. They just released episode 10, which is the they're touching on the Great Barrier thing, which was the where no man has gone before with Kirk's friend, that Gary Mitchell, who ended up with the godlike powers, and so it's I like where they're going with it. It just kind of remains to be seen what they're going to do for the last episode, and the look that they managed to get for the Romulan commander, the female Romulan commander, and make her look just like which I thought it was the same actress, like, to some degree, but it's actually funny because it's actually her daughter, so it was very fitting that they used her. But I'm wondering if the reason why the show is ending is not only because they're finishing the run and it's kind of bumping into the motion picture timeline, but I'm wondering if they're going to lend their set to Discovery for some actual shooting and some Constitution-class starships, because we haven't seen any yet. And it would definitely make it easier on production if they didn't have to CG at all. Other than maybe, you know, kind of sprucing it up a little bit. But I would be interested to see what they do with this. It's definitely one of my kind of out there theories that I hope is true. So I guess we'll see what happens in that regard. But I think that this, if they hit, you know, with the season two, I think we'll see how, after the war is over, because I feel like, Kurtzman said he doesn't want to bring the Klingon War to season two, but I feel like they're going to go a lighter tone in season two, and I think that we're going to see less military ships and see more kind of light toned plans and plot lines and ships and technologies kind of balancing out a little bit and less high techness. I think that the Discovery is going to be this giant purposeful MacGuffin that they're going to use and reasons why that they should mothball some of this tech until later, until it gets some of the kinks worked out, and because they don't want this falling into the wrong hands. And so I feel like they're going to purposely make some of this tech not accessible at some point. So that may come to the point. They also may, I'm kind of wondering if Saru does die, I'm wondering if Burnham's going to get promoted to first officer, at which point she would be back in the same boat as she was with Georgiou. And I feel like Lorca, he's kind of like, you get this strict, militaristic type of captain, and at the same time, he's starting to loosen up a little bit. Because even when the creature came on board, he's like, yeah, do whatever you got to do. Like, you know, just take care of it. So I'm wondering if he knows that Burnham's destined for some kind of greatness to some degree. And I'm wondering if maybe there's something with Lorca. Like, maybe he's Section 31. Maybe he's Mirror Universe. Maybe he's from the future. And things had to play out a certain way. And so he's lived through part of this timeline. It kind of makes me wonder if you know, he knows something. And that's why things are so shady with him. So it'll be interesting to see how this whole thing plays out. But I'm wondering if Burnham's going to be the captain in season two. And that's why we're building up Burnham to be a normal, functional human being for the second season. So obviously the Discovery is not going to last forever. It will probably only last the duration of this show. But it would be kind of interesting if they made it a time travel situation where the Discovery kind of randomly shows up in different timelines and kind of intersects at some point. And because you got to remember there's no mention of this ship in the future. Granted, this didn't exist back then, but this tech was a bit advanced for the entire fleet at this point because it was a prototype and actually one of two of the only kind, and now the only one of its kind. So I'm wondering if some of this technology doesn't get plugged in until much, much later. So I guess we'll see. And like I said, I'm very shocked by how well this episode went and all of the naysayers, myself included. Now, granted, I'm not one of the people that just blatantly hates Discovery. I never said I hated it. I didn't have high hopes for it. That was more so my thoughts and mentality on it. But I think that they've kind of hit their stride. I'll see where it goes. I'm still interested. I'm still invested. But it's still got a lot of explaining to do. So I'll just leave it at that. I still wonder if Ash Tyler is Vok transformed to look human. Just because looking at their facial builds and just kind of how they look, I'm wondering if it's the same guy. And there's just a lot of similarities. I think they're playing coy with it, but I think that the only reason this actor only has this one credit on Discovery is because he's made up. So I think we'll have to wait and see what that divulges. But I have a feeling it's going to be the same guy. That he's Vok. And the before and after photo that's on TrekMovie.com, with the postulation of it, that Discovery is possibly a Section 31 ship to some degree. I think that Ash Tyler is going to be one of those characters that proves to be interesting as we progress. He could very well be one of the first converted, augmented Klingons to look the TOS style, kind of like Darwin from Trouble with Tribbles. So I would not be surprised in the slightest if it's actually him, because of the way that they said the Watcher clan and transforming him, losing everything, sacrificial, and being there as long as he has. So however, there's also the whole thing of, you know, him saying it's been 6 months and he's been on this ship for 7 months, and so it's hard to say. We'll see what happens. So regardless, I think the show is going to show that there's still a lot to play with in this universe. So I'm not really sure what we're going for anymore. It's kind of treading new ground, which again is a good thing. But on a side note, I had a discussion on Twitter last week with an individual from another Star Trek podcast. I was using the Alter Geek handle and talking to this guy, and he's wearing the Disco Star Trek Discovery shirt, and which you can get from StarTrek.com, which I made the kind of smart aleck remark of the character being of them trying to change the acronym of Star Trek. So I said to him, I wonder if they're changing Star Trek Discovery to Disco, you know, trying to remove the STD acronym with Disco by having it on the crew shirts, as opposed to the three-letter Trek. Because TOS, TAS, TNG, DS9, VOY, ENT, and then DIS. He said, no, that's trying to remove anything. The three-letter abbreviation is DSC and has been since the show was announced. Actually, initially it was STD, which I realized that they do another Star Trek podcast and they have connections with CBS, which I don't have, unfortunately. But they did start out as STD and changed it to DSC only because they realized the mistake of the acronym. So then he tried to correct me and say that Voyager is VGR, not Voy. And I says, I've never seen VGR as the acronym for Voyager in any place. The DSC I've not seen, but that makes more sense. Literally only seen this. And so I pulled up Memory Alpha, and you see TOS and TAS, TNG, DS9, VOY, ENT, and the DIS. He says, if you ask CBS, they've said for some time that Voy is not the official abbreviation. And I made the comment, so everyone in the world is wrong and CBS is correct. Is that like the same mentality of how Discovery fits in canon too? And he says, CBS is the owner and they say the abbreviation is VGR and DSC. Those are the official abbreviations. Obviously, some use different ones. I said, so the official site's wrong. And I took a screenshot of Voyager on StarTrek.com. And it says, Star Trek Voyager... parenthesis VOY parenthesis, and says focuses on the 24th century, blah 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 blah. And he says, I'm not telling you anything of the kind, I'm telling you what CBS has told me, and that's all. The official abbreviation is VGR. I said, and I says, well, obviously they've got something wrong then, because I've never seen it as VGR. I know that they used that as the production thing while they were shooting it, but it was officially VOY for years after that. So if anybody has any contact with CBS, I would love to talk to somebody on CBS about the Star Trek abbreviations and how this series even connects to canon. Even if it was for an off-the-record interview, just so that I... can kind of relay, you know, because I see this is this certain point right now with Star Trek that the only ones privy to any information or any kind of like, oh, we have the specialty, are the people that are directly tied with CBS. I feel like these mainstream media, quote-unquote, fans or people that are directly, you know, paid by CBS or people that are talking with any of that or got special privilege to the premiere and whatnot, I feel like they're hyping the series, but they're not really explaining anything and they've been, like, gung-ho from the get-go instead of a little bit cynical of it, just from what we've seen. And I don't feel like that's a true, honest review of the series or any of the content. Like, I understand it's Star Trek, but I feel like I'm getting a better Star Trek experience out of the Orville, despite the comedy that's involved. And yes, it's making social commentary on stuff, but it's at the same time, it's playing with things that are a little bit lighter, but they're very serious things, such as the social media trap and the gender swap at birth and all that kind of mentality. And Discovery, while it's touching on Star Trek stuff to some degree, it's, I feel like everybody that's reviewing one or the other is like, they're all in, or they're there's no like questionability or no hesitation on anything. And I feel like with me doing my review as somebody that is not gung-ho on Star Trek Discovery and who's not, you know, I mean, yes, I'm all in on the Orville, but regardless, I'm a Star Trek fan, so I'm going to enjoy sci-fi, but I just want to know how this is going to fit. And so coming into it as someone who's disliked majority of the season so far and starting to get into the point where I'm enjoying it, I feel like I'm not as biased in my opinion of Trek. So I don't know, what do you guys think? And sound off in the episode post on AlterGeek, thisweekingeek.net, and geekcastradio.com. So let me know what you guys think, and until next time, live long and prosper.
Look at this place. Picard rubbing elbows with Kirk. Romulans and Ferengi arguing like old hens. I should have known better than to trust a mortal. You're incapable of rising above the mundane.